Over a decade after the seminal anime series wrapped, the visionary Hideaki Anno decided to expand and enhance his creation. Turning to a new generation of creatives, he sought to bring his Evangelion series to film with a rebuild of the building blocks that made his creation so beloved. Join us this week as we begin our examination of the quadrilogy of film that will take 14 years to complete. This is Kaiju vs. History, Evangelion 1.0. You are not alone.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your estranged son who refuses to get in his Eva, Patrick. And joining me is a cross-like explosion of purple energy known as Miles. Hey, Miles.
Good evening, Patrick. I will never forgive the Alien franchise for introducing the term quadrilogy into pop culture.
Oh, no. Sorry. What's your preferred?
Technically should be tetralogy, correct?
Oh, it makes more sense too. Yeah.
No, but quadrilogy. I mean, me too. Because I say it too. As soon as those words like came out of my mouth, I was like, that doesn't taste right. But ever since that Alien box set came out, that is the word I have used for a series of four movies, and it is just in case people wanted to pile on to me. I know it's correct. I hate myself for you. Don't worry. And speaking of hating yourself, welcome to Evangelion.
We're back. Yeah, we are back. It feels like it's not been that long, but in real world time from the end of Evangelion to this first of the rebuild films, which we'll talk about in just a minute, a decade has passed, right? A full 10 or 9 years.
This was 06. 07.
This is 07. Yeah, no, end of Evangelion.
10.
Yeah, it was 1997. So
yeah.
10 years, which doesn't seem like a long time, but I feel like the cultural differences between 1997 and 2007 were great, you know?
I also think 9/11, when you're in the thick of it, 10 years seems like a long time. And then when you're looking back, 10 years is not a long time in some instances, especially in the 21st century. But we are in the thick of it. So when this was announced,
10 years for like a reboot of a movie series or, you know, some kind of reboot doesn't seem like a long time. But honestly, much shorter time frames have had reboots. Like
yes.
If you're looking at the Spider-Man movies, there's like,
well, yeah, I was going to say, you know, you got the Spider-Man movies, but also like when there's talk of rebooting something, you're like, oh, that just came out. And you look back and that came out in 1996. That came out almost 40 years ago.
came out in 2005, 19 years.
Because I'll see people from our generation be like, they can't remake that. They just came out. And it's like Mighty Joe Young or something, you know, or I mean, Godzilla is kind of perennially being remade and rebooted. So that one doesn't really count.
Yeah, there's some series that are made for reboots, and this just didn't seem like it was going to be one of them. You know, I'm happy that it is. I have held off on watching the rebuilds because I knew we were going to get to them for the podcast. And I can say now that we're starting in on them, I'm very excited to talk about them. Got my UCC coffee here. This is definitely official. Got some Doritos off to the side.
You got them Baja Mango Habanero chips.
I was eating some of those.
Those things are good.
This is also
the first of their what?
They're tangy, Miles. Those chips
are very
tangy.
When the Baja flavor hits you, you're always I am always constantly confused when that flavor comes in, despite the name of the chip. Like the fiery mango habanero, good. But when the Baja flavor comes in, I'm like, what? Like, I love it, but like, I'm like, what is happening?
Miles, a Baja man.
Yeah, I mean, I am. But this is also the first of Hideaki Anno's Shin series, as it's come to be called.
Because technically, since then, yes.
Well, no, it is titled that.
Yes.
Evangelion Shin Gekijomon.
Oh, you're really walking all over my next segment here.
Oh, right. I'm sorry, Patrick. Before we get into Evangelion 1.0, what's in that title?
So a lot, a lot, because as we realized, all the Evangelion sections have tons of different titles throughout them. We are calling this film by, I think, mostly the international / U.S. version of the title, which drops the Neon Genesis. That is not in, I think, the title most anywhere, right?
I believe so. I believe that's correct.
I'm just double checking. It's not on the posters or anything. No, it's just called
It's just Evangelion.
Evangelion.
We always called it. We called it Evangelion or Eva.
Actually, I mean, I feel like when the show was out, a lot of people kind of shortened it to just Neon Genesis. But I
only knew people that said Eva.
Eva is definitely the more popular one now, for sure. Alien 1.0, which I love that was in like all versions, was, it's not like Evangelion 1, but 1.0, I guess that naming convention has been around for anime, especially, but even before this. 1.0, you are parentheses, not in parentheses alone, another naming convention for this US release that they'll continue in the next two films, which I think is a great title just right off the bat. If we can,
it's a fantastic title. It really, really is. Fall Out Boy would be proud. but no, I love this because it is almost as if the capital C creator is talking to the characters in a sense. It's, I mean, again, when you're watching Evangelion, and look, anyone who pops into these thinking they are going to get some wild deep dive into every little aspect of Eva, I apologize. We are, as I've said many times, not an academic podcast, and
you'll find those YouTube videos that are like 5 hours long.
Yeah. Someone with like way more time on their hands and way more qualified will help you out. That said, we will give some, but we are looking at these more as movies as opposed to, you know, redoing the story itself. You know,
I will say I wasn't able to find a lot about the naming of these films as far as like, where did You Are Not Alone come from, or was there a deeper meaning? I think there's a lot of things you can draw from it, which is great.
Yeah,
that is not the actual title of the series. At least in Japan, this film came out as Evangelion Shin Geki Joban, and then : Joe, which translates to Evangelion New Theatrical Version Introduction. Joe, the first three films kind of follow a naming convention of Joe Haku, which roughly means beginning, middle, and end, which is, I think they continue on with the idea that the fourth movie is 3.0 plus one, which would be end and beginning.
Right. Yes.
And these are acts of traditional Japanese play. So these three kind of words, which works great. The direct translation of that into English does not work great. You know, if we just called it like act one,
I prefer the English title. I think You Are Not Alone is fantastic. It's a little evocative. Like, you're like, oh, okay. Like, I know Evangelion. What is this?
It is great for the reviewers who did not like these movies, because the title of your article writes itself. Evangelion 1.0, it is parentheses not good. Or, you know, I think I saw some of those
hackneyed college newspaper nonsense. But what I was saying before is like, when you're watching Evangelion, you can't help but kind of put in that little like, you want to start looking at everything, and then you start like, oh, this means this, or this means this, and like you kind of feel like you're back in a college class talking about literature, because you are looking for these things because of the nature of this property, and because of the reputation that this series has of having all of this, you know, subtext attached to it. Very little of that. Well, that's the wrong way to put it. Nothing new is really to be mined necessarily from 1.0. I will say that this one, is, I'm not sure how much we're going to talk about it really, because this is, and I kind of like, if we weren't doing Rebuild, I would have watched this instead of that god-awful death squared. This is a one for one, the first six episodes of Neon Genesis Evangelion that has, and just because I say that is not a, a disparaging remark, because this is done with brand new animation. It's done with new recording for the voice cast, which I believe for England or for North America release or Western release is the ADV cast that they brought back.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And those would continue on into the other versions of Evangelion 1.0. There was, so Evangelion 1.0 is what the main theatrical release was. The DVD release was retitled Evangelion 1.01 because it did have some changes to it, which is hilarious to treat your movie like a piece of software.
But that is such the time.
Yeah. Well, it also, if you're watching this on Amazon, which is where I watched it, I believe, or was it Netflix? Who has these movies?
Amazon. Netflix. Oh, wait, Amazon, you're right.
Yeah, the show, the series is on Netflix right now. But you will only find this under Evangelion 1.11, which is, they are different. There are additional scenes that they added in to the kind of final version, I would say, for these films. And there are also some changes. If you desire to try and go back and watch the original theatrical release, you cannot. It's like nowhere online. It doesn't exist. But, you know, fans have kept catalogs of data about what's the difference between the movies.
Yes.
How things have changed. And they're very slight changes in some areas. There's animation kind of cleanups and things like that. But
yeah, of the three, this deviates the least.
Well, yes. And there's also a lot of people that have gone through and painstakingly compared the original six episodes to this film. And yeah, the idea for this was exactly that. Hideaki Anno had the idea of, why don't we take the show that people love, the beloved show, and kind of shrink it down into movie format, really just hit some of those highlights. For him, I think I remember an article saying the first six episodes were definitely kind of an arc, and then it was like episodes 7 to 19 would be the second arc, and then 20 to 25 or what have you, an end of Evangelion would be a third movie. The problem with that is there's so many episodes in there that don't play into like the greater plot. Like I think episode 7 is where we get an episode completely from the point of view of Misato and like her investigations into Seely and other things. Mm-hmm. And it's like that just wouldn't really work in this movie. I don't think it would really work at the beginning of the next movie very well.
Well, and also keep in mind, you know, these movies are not super short. So, I mean, if you're thinking about it, you know, in terms of like this first movie was 98 minutes, 100 minutes. So they're condensing six episodes into about
the episodes were like 26 minutes.
Yeah. 22 ish, I guess. So you're getting about like 4.5 episodes worth. So they're skimming a little bit in terms of this first little bit, but you know, for the most part, they're able to kind of give you a one for one experience, especially for the first six episodes. The run times increase as we move on, but we also deviate more and more from the initial series, which for me is a good thing. I like that the idea is to start everyone at a controlled spot. Like the first movie is we are setting things up to this is what you know of Evangelion. And For all fans and new recruits alike, you know, you get to see the first six episodes kind of reimagined with new animation, with new voice acting. Everything's cleaned up because we forget, you know, they didn't have a whole lot of money when they made this show. And some of it kind of looks meh, you know, in terms of production quality.
Yeah, it is a little jarring going back and watching this movie with those six episodes side by side. There is an very endearing quality to the animation of the 97 show because they were doing it, you know, as like one of their first major series as a company. And there are things in the show that I prefer because of kind of the homespun element of making these like it's ready to order. And this movie, they definitely had a little bit more time to prep. I think they were starting talking about a rebuild series in about 2002 and didn't really start in on the production until they announced the, well, the reason why we call it the rebuild series is the initial, I think 2006 announcement called it Rebuild of Evangelion 0.01 or something along those lines. And they eventually dropped the title of Rebuild, but because that's how they announced it under, that is the general term that it's used now by the fandom and things like that. Even though, I mean, it's nowhere on this movie, you know, market material, that they don't call it that officially anywhere since that initial tentative name came out. But Rebuild series works really well. I don't know what else you would call this besides, you know, like the point oh series or something along those lines. Speaking of which, there's so much to talk about in the title this week, Miles. The zero that is in the title and the poster, the title card, is not a regular zero. It is stylized with a giant slash down the middle, which has a couple different meanings, an empty set in mathematics, but also supposedly is the same symbol that Roman gladiators were marked with to indicate that they died in a fight, like in a mosaic. Don't know if that was what was going through Hideaki Anno's mind when he styled the poster like that.
Nothing would make me happier than to hear all of these like well thought out like theories about this, and then to have Hideaki Anno be like, "Oh, I just like the Ghostbuster symbol."
Bussin, you know, makes me feel good.
And that sounds like I'm just like kind of inviting chaos, but like having seen Kojima's reaction to some things, that 100% happens. Oh no, I just like this thing. The end.
What do you think about this poster for Evangelion 1.0? Because we can talk about this one and
I love it.
2.0 next time. It's just the high school age students on a stairwell, and there's actually a little bit more to it.
What's his face? Yeah, whoever it is that's not really in the movie this time.
Yeah, well, I was about to say even the head of the student body, Kari, is on the cover, and it's like I don't even remember her having like two lines in this first film.
I'm trying to remember. No, she doesn't, because I think
she has one, because the two other kids, when they sneak out of the bunker, they like tell her that they're going to the bathroom.
Oh yeah, that's right. But I was gonna say I couldn't remember anything other than her first situation with Asuka.
I feel like maybe she has some other lines with Toji and Inkinsuke, but her character comes back in kind of an important way in 3.0, or no, I guess 3.0 plus 1.0, the final film. But she's like barely in the series. I mean, like you said, Kaworu is not in this movie hardly at all.
No, he's like in the post-credit sequence, or yeah,
he gets like a final scene towards the end, and they really kind of build up that he's going to be more important perhaps than he was in the series. I think he kind of becomes mythologized because of how important he was in the later episodes of the Evangelion series. I was a little disappointed they didn't do more with his
we'll get character.
Yeah, but it's just so funny he's here on the poster. The next movie we're going to talk about uses the exact same poster and just adds in two characters, which I think is very fun.
I like that, but unfortunately we didn't get this poster. We got because we can't have subtlety. We have a big CGI,
so bad, Miles. I hate
Ava
it.
One, it's so bad.
I blame Funimation. They've got their name on this poster.
I also blame Funimation, because I mean they use the same font, and this had a limited theatrical engagement. I think I don't know if it came here where I live. I mean, I know it made like $20 million at the box office, which is nothing to sniff at in 2007.
I feel like I remember some of the other ones definitely getting a larger theatrical
3.0 like special. Plus 1.0 absolutely had a Fathom event. I know that. I waited to the next day to go on Amazon because I hadn't watched any of the other ones prior, and I was just going to watch it all in one go.
Yeah, so I talked a little bit about Hideako kind of announcing this movie in 2006, there was an official announcement that came with that where he announced the crew, the cast, the voice actors that were going to be involved in part of this. And then in addition to that, he sent a kind of like a manifesto poster to 50 different movie theaters in Japan, kind of giving his reasoning for why they decided to do the rebuild series, which has so many great quotes, some of them which are often quoted and attributed to him, you know, like specifically to him. Quote, you know, we're not returning to our roots. I've set up a production company and studio, and it is in this new setting that we will start again without looking back, without admiration for the circumstances. We aim to walk towards the future. And goes on to talk about, you know, the purposes for the series. It's a good read. I think it is, you know, one of those things that maybe there would have been like an uprising amongst fans about doing a reboot of sort. But one of the things he says, I think, in this poster is like they want to give a new generation of fans the ability to interact with Evangelion like live, like as the movies are coming out. And these movies came out over the course of 14 years. Is that right, Miles? From 2007 to 2021? It's a crazy long time period.
It's wild because, I mean, it became kind of a joke that the fourth Eva movie wasn't coming out. Yeah, and especially because Hideaki Anno kept doing things or being involved in things. He actually didn't do much in terms of directing, but 3.0 and 3.0 plus 1.0, he had only directed Shin Godzilla.
Well, there was the pandemic that at least pushed it back one full year, because I think it was supposed to come out in 2020. And it's like, well, time makes fools of us all there. But the second film, You Cannot Advance, was supposed to come out the following year, I think, 2008, and was pushed back to 2009. And then the third film doesn't come out until 2012. So there's like a...
But all of that to me is a understandable like length of time for a series. You know, we see that kind of stuff all the time. That's not as stressful to me. The 2012 to 2021,
the 9-year gap,
is certainly more stressful. And in fact, he decided not to direct Shin Ultraman, despite I think writing it or co-writing it, so that he could put the finishing touches once and for all on this series. And I guess we're deciding to just kind of like talk about the series as a whole today, so we don't have to keep doing it every single episode.
We're going to talk about a little bit of the production woes that some of these had. There's so much right up front to talk about with this first movie. Hideaki Anno did not go back to Gainax, the company that made the show with him, for a number of reasons, but he kind of made his own production studio and used some of his own money, I think, to get this rebuild series off the ground. He worked with a lot of Gainax colleagues and brought back a lot of the original animators and things from the show. But eventually, I guess Hideaki Anno and Gainax had a bit of a falling out. I don't think it was happening during the production of this movie. But it's so funny. You and I both got a little pop-up in our IMDb, or from IMDb, that was on the Amazon.
I gotta say, I do appreciate like their little, like if you pause, they usually give you a little like, I want to reference pop-up video from VH1, which, you know, hasn't existed in forever. But these little factoids, and I love it. I like, look, their little ad stuff is irritating as all hell, but these little pop-up bits of like when you pause and you get little informations and tidbits about the movie, and then like the voice cast and stuff, is great. I absolutely love this. And I gotta say, they did some good stuff with the Evangelion stuff, because there was one, which we'll talk about when we get to the second movie, where they kind of tracked a couple of the subtle differences between the source material and the movie, which I really appreciated.
Yes, I did as well, because obviously we are very interested in the kind of production and like where these come from in the world, in the real world. Evangelion 1.0 has three directors attached to it. Hideaki Anno is credited as a director, even though he is more the creative director for like the series as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But he had that top down kind of mentality and brought back folks from the original series, Masayuki and Kazuya Tsuramaki. They were both animation directors on Evangelion, Neon Genesis Evangelion, and also took on various segments in the 90s films in Death and Rebirth and Evangelion. And they added in bits and pieces, even to this first movie, that changed it a little bit from the original. And I think they would go on to also help direct 2.0, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, added in some of the voices that made the original series so popular. They the production costs and design elements and thing were taken on by Studio Kara, which is, like I said, something that Hideaki Anno developed specifically for the Rebuild series. And he chose to mostly not take investments from the outside, from larger animation studios. And part of that is very good, because he can make these movies exactly how he wanted and make the changes in the animation style how he wanted. The bad thing is, if you don't have a producer that is providing money, kind of twisting your arm, you can take 9 years to make a sequel film, you know, because they're not super worried about the immediate return on investment. So there's goods and bads in that. I think you don't want anything tying down Hideaki Anno when he's cooking, you know, Miles. You don't want right. to have anyone else step in that kitchen and strong him. Because, I mean, we technically did see that with his work at Gainax at the end of the series in episode 25 and 26. It's like, I don't think this is what he wanted to do. They were out of time. They were under a massive amount of pressure. And, you know, Hideaki talks about like how depressed and unhappy he was in that point of his life. And this is like the opposite end of that spectrum when he's making this movie. Do you want to talk about some of the differences in especially some of these angels?
Yeah, and sure.
Angel fights.
The angels, because yeah. So this is the aspect. I mean, obviously this is a kaiju show, and you know, Evangelion is essentially, I see, if I say tangentially, people are gonna get mad. And if I say it's a kaiju show, people are gonna,
honestly, it is.
There's a Venn diagram, and Evangelion is somewhere in there.
They beast out so much more in the Rebuild series than in the original. They really do play into like, these are giant monsters that we just happen to every once in a while be able to control. You know, they do not feel like mech suits very
often. No, yes, they absolutely dissolve the disillusion of that this is a mech franchise. I know a lot of people, including our friend Drew, kind of dislike the props that this gets for being a mecha anime.
Yes. Yeah.
Because Anno obviously said he was influenced by Gundam, and there are absolutely mecha anime influences at work here, but it technically isn't a mecha anime because these aren't mecha. They're armored life forms.
Yeah.
Body horror than anything else.
It is totally its own thing, and it continues to be in the Rebuild series. He talked about one of the main influences for the Rebuild is the G Gundam series, which was early 90s, I want to say, that brought in a whole new generation of Gundam fans and really turned some of the ideas in the original series on its ear and changed it up. And, you know, I don't know if this series changes kind of the base idea of Evangelion that much, but it definitely slaps, you know, a new coat of paint on the series. It adds some new characters and changes to characters, which are very important. But in this movie, the main difference is, I think, the use of CGI animation, which is not something that was ever in the original series. And different angel art. And it really bugs me that the angel numbering is different in this series. But who's the first angel is, yeah, Angel number 5, Ramiel, I think, is the second one that is fought in this, but is upgraded to Angel 6 in this movie, I think. Let me just double check. I've got some of these names down. No. Is Ramiel the diamond? Yes. Ramiel was 5 in the original series, is Angel 6 here. They just like kind of upgraded the numbering by one. It's the largest difference because it was just a large diamond angel that can like fire energy beams in the original series. In this one, the use of CGI, it turns it into this like multi-dimensional morphing like matrix of energy,
right? Which is what we kind of know the angels to sort of be.
Well, and a lot of them do have like this very flux like nature, and this one more so than others.
I think the aesthetic choice for CGI here adds to the cosmic horror of the angels because they look so other from everything else around them. Even though they use CGI in some of the fight scenes, these things are so clearly something else. And I think it makes their designs so much more interesting and so much more terrifying because you're like, oh, it's a diamond. And then you see like what it does to some people or things. And you're like, oh, good Lord. The
great, great kind of
execution.
Cthulhu like
creatures.
No, I really wish we had gotten more. Not all my favorite angels made it into the second movie even, but these first three I think were really well done, and the fights are upgraded. The fights are I feel like on the nature of combats very similar to what some of the action we got in End of Evangelion. You know, it's really ramped up for these films. So you get three massive kaiju fights in this movie, you know, that almost all of them are upgraded from the original show, especially that Ramiel fight. Ramiel was just like, they each took like two shots against one another. When Ramiel fires, it's like energy blast. It just entire mountains get vaporized. You see
the
level of destruction that thing is pumping out. And it's like, oh my God. It's like, yeah, no, they need to take this thing out. It works very well as kind of like a climactic fight for this first movie. That's the one where I think Rey kind of takes some damage because she's holding the shield for Shinji. And this first movie is really focused on that Rey-Shinji dynamic. And it's interesting to see because I feel like that doesn't become very important in this series until much later on, you know, until the fourth movie.
Yes and no. They have kind of changed up some of the personal relationships a little bit. And we'll talk a little bit about that more in the second movie. And I guess now would be a good time to say it. Like, we decided, while we are going to release these things in order, we recorded all of Rebuild at one time just because I felt this is, I think, a suggestion that I kind of pushed because I knew I couldn't remember everything. Mm-hmm. And if we had spent too much time between 3.0 and 3.0 plus 1.0, I was going to be very irritated.
Well, yeah, so we would have recorded 3.0 in September of 2024, and we wouldn't have gotten to record 3.0 plus 1.0 Thrice Upon a Time, which is my least favorite title of the entire series.
I like it. I like it. It's silly.
Until like June of 2025, so like 10 months later.
No, we made the right call because you're going to consistently hear June of 2024 Patrick and Miles, but spread across time.
maybe June and July. I don't know if we'll do all.
Well, yeah, you're probably June, July is fine too. but yeah, we are certainly, you know, trying to do all this in one go. Let's talk a little bit for those who may not know anything about Evangelion. Some base plot stuff.
Oh, for this movie, yeah, it's very similar. I don't think Mitch character stuff is different. I will say you have Shinji, who is the son of Kendu, the abandoned son who is brought back to meet his father. His father is in charge of NERV, a organization that basically creates, once again, I think to the public, what the public thinks they're giant robots to fight off angels in this universe. And angels are this existential kaiju threat, which seemingly just wants to destroy humanity. And the Evangelions that are created are put in place to fight them and destroy them. Pretty simple, pretty basic plot. Masato Katsuragi is brought in as basically Shinji's handler. And I think she has a different designation. I don't think she's called captain when we first meet her. I think she has a higher rank.
I think so too.
Which is interesting.
Isn't she deputy commander?
But she has a higher rank, and she seems to have potentially more information about the Nerve.
Plot. Because I feel like they make it clearer that she is more, at least the way she's like done in this film, as opposed to the series. It's clearer earlier that she is a little more suspicious of Nerve than we initially thought.
She is and she isn't, because she, part of the main series, her character arc is finding out exactly what they're doing with Lilith. She seems to know that because she's the one that shows Shinji the Adam / Lilith that they have chained up and crucified in the basement of Nerve HQ. And it's like, oh, okay. And she's just cool with this. But I don't think she understands Seeley's kind of human instrumentality project, that whole thing in this universe. And I will say right off the bat, like, my major problem with this series is I think Misato kind of takes a back seat, as opposed to the original series where she is like almost a co-main character with Shinji. I feel like you get so much more of her in.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it helps that I watched the first two movies kind of back to back in succession, like we're recording. But maybe it's more the second movie, but I still feel like she's got some main character energy. Watching them together makes it flow better, I think.
Ray is a clone, spoiler warning, man, a clone of Shinji's mother.
Yeah, we'll get to that. That is a late turn reveal, and we need to hold off on that.
Well, this is all stuff from the original show as well, because not much
again has changed for in people movie. Who haven't watched Evangelion.
I guess that's not introduced until the second movie, maybe the third movie.
Is it even in the second movie?
I'm not sure.
I think it's the third.
Definitely by the third, but we'll get to that as well. What I think is, I really don't think these movies are made for completely new. I mean, this movie is. This movie can be watched by completely new fans of Evangelion. I think once the further you get into it, it's like, you should probably go back and watch the series.
So that's the lens I'm watching this rebuild with, or watching rebuild with this time, because I want to see if this can be done by itself. And so far, I feel like it can. I mean, obviously with part one, yes, but I want to ask you something. And cause I know there's several dubs in the first episode of Evangelion, which is remade here. Shinji's traipsing about a empty city to meet Misato. Do you remember the context the first time you ever watched it in the show? Because for some reason, I thought he was supposed to be meeting like a singer or something, that he had won some contest.
No, he's supposed to be meeting his father. And
Right. No, I understand the current context. I'm trying to remember if a dub told us that instead.
Oh,
that,
maybe, like, there was a bad dub, yeah, in the 90s.
I don't know. I'm thinking. I think there was a bad dub, and I could be making this up, but I could have sworn that it felt more like there was even more of a bait and switch, that like he was meeting Misato because he thought he was going to a radio station or something.
So anyway,
he's supposed to meet her, and this kid is just traipsing about this completely evacuated city, and danger starts to happen. Eventually, Shinji, in all of his infinite wisdom, says to himself, might as well go to a shelter, I guess. Like, in the most nonchalant way, because as is said not too far in the future in this movie, he's an idiot. It's a character who has actively annoyed me for years. And
I will say, boy howdy, maybe it's because we've already been through all these experiences with Shinji before. I feel 10 times worse watching him go through all this again, Groundhog's Day style, in his father, like, really forcing him to be tortured inside this Eva unit. And
oh, yeah, when he won't get out, and father's like, oh, the water.
No, they're like, increase the pressure. You know, he like basically knocks him out. That's in 3-2.
So
that's a great part. That's
yeah, we'll get to that. So we basically come to find out that his father expects him to pilot a, I would say, experimental defense against the angels in the Evangelion, which we now know in this is it in this iteration that there are like each country has some. Maybe the international ones are introduced. It's tough. But basically, Shinji is supposed to pilot this giant Ava, and it doesn't go great.
No, and it plays out just like the original series. He basically loses the fight versus the first angel, and the angel kind of comes alive without his guidance. And yeah, his Ava fights for itself and destroys the first berserk angel. And in the second fight, he decides to go and help, and just barely manages to eke out a win against the second one. And he's finally bullied into piloting the Ava for the third one, because I think multiple times Rey is threatened with being the only one to stand in the way, because she won't say no to Gendo. I don't think, maybe she can't, you know, conditioning wise. So Shinji just keeps getting put in the same position over and over in this movie. He's like, he saw Rey like near dead after a fight, and realizes if he doesn't do something, she will probably die.
Right. So there is a global cataclysm called the Second Impact. And
which is very different in this movie series than in the original series, because this has turned all of the oceans red in the Rebuild series. Basically,
yes,
purged the ocean of life, which is pretty crazy.
They get to it a little bit more in the second one, but I was wondering if this is more of like a red tide situation.
Well, yes,
because they talk
about
how much it stinks.
Yes. Well, the impact, I think that we do get to see at some point in the original series, happened, I think, in Antarctica, but it boiled the ocean basically and turned it red in this series. And we find out in the second series that there's kind of like aquariums and arcs that are keeping sea animal life kind of separate in clean water. And just like in the original series, non-ocean life, like our lakes and rivers and stuff, are not affected by this, but the main ocean, and you do see Earth from space in a few points, is just completely red, which is crazy.
Yeah.
In a bit of a visual difference. And as we get in the series to the third impact, it more the planet turns red later on.
So another factor of this film and this series is that Shinji has to go to school when he's not doing pilot stuff. There is a regular school in the Japanese city that he is residing in. And his first day there, he gets punched in the face because one of the popular kids' little sister was hurt in the battle.
Yes, Toji's sister, who we don't actually see in this movie, but we do find out she makes a full recovery, I think, in the second movie.
And then we also find out that like there's a media blackout. So here's my question to you, Patrick. Mm-hmm. There's a media blackout. No one should know anything about what's happening at NERV. How do these kids know that he's piloting the Ava?
I don't know if that's ever explained in the series or in this movie.
Because the teachers seem to know that he and Rey are, you know, let's say special and aren't going to be at class, because Rey is 100% like, well, elsewhere.
I will say in the series, this is not a normal class. And I assume it's the same in the movies. This is a class specifically of people that they have identified have the capacity to potentially pilot an Eva. Because in the original series, in the second movie, Toji is the one that is piloting Angel number 5 or whatever. Eva number 5. Eva unit number 5, which turns into an angel.
I don't think they make that clear here.
Yeah, so, but that is, I mean, obviously, because we do eventually see that, like, Shinji has, like, multiple special agents that, like, follow him around, and he has surveillance on him 24/7.
Well, there's a comment that, like, well, why didn't the special guards check in? Like, they didn't think it was necessary. It was a schoolyard scuffle.
And because
builds character.
Yeah, Gendo is probably like, let them fight. Right. He likes seeing his son beat up.
Oh, man, I feel bad for anyone who hasn't watched Ava before and has listened to this show, because they're going to be very, very confused, because we are glossing over a lot of the plot stuff just because, like,
yeah,
we've covered it before.
Well, we also don't typically go super deep into the plot of these films.
But
that's the basic plot, is he is trying to connect with his father, but what he ends up connecting with in this film is Misato and Rei. They eventually, he moves in with Misato, who becomes kind of like a big sister, more a mother figure. And by the end of the series, like, she's ready to give her life for Shinji. She's very much a believer.
I love Misato. And we haven't talked about the best boy number one of the entire series.
Pen Pen,
my man Pen Pen.
Yeah, Pen Pen has a hilarious tiny arc in this rebuild series where he, I think, finds like a wife and potentially has kids.
Yeah, because he goes with, well, we'll talk about that in the next movie. But like, Pen Pen like just has so much personality. And like, yeah, he has his own room in this apartment. And Masato doesn't give any other explanation. Like, she doesn't say, oh, he's this super intelligent penguin or any of this stuff. Oh, I found him.
Yeah,
just, the end.
There's a like, penguin who survived the second impact.
He's a penguin who's around, but like also loves watching TV and taking showers.
Yeah, I guess in my head canon, like, she was present at the second impact at the
South Pole. Yes.
So maybe she just like saved a young penguin then and has grown up with it. But it's just one of those like little fun quirks of Hideaki Anno's work.
Yeah, it's the part of anime bullshit that's so great, is like every anime always has some weird, like, you can have the most realistic anime or have this like really dark story like we have with Evangelion, but then also there's a penguin for no reason other than it's cool to have a penguin here.
So funny. It's like, it, I don't think it super works to have all the kind of like comedic beats that were in the original series in this movie, because they work in like a TV show format. Like the joke about him being scared by Pen Pen and like running out of the bathroom naked to have his genitals. Well,
it's repeated in the next film though. Like, yeah, they commit to the bit.
Yeah, it's very much like a vaudeville act where but where the camera is situated, his junk is covered up by a beer can. And she goes to pick up the beer can and there's like something else in the background that's covering up.
Amazing visual gag that they do again. It's fantastic. And let's talk about the race-sized elephant in the room, because this movie and the next movie really love having 14-year-old nudity.
Yeah.
Well, it's really weird.
It was in the original series, but
I know it was weird then too.
They add in her nipples in this movie.
Yeah. Like, not only did they like show nudity, they double down, because there's more of it in both, I think, this and the next one. And I would have thought that like there would have been some sort of like, hey, they're 14. We didn't age them up or anything. They specifically say Rei is 14 years old.
Well, later in the series, they do, spoiler warning, pass a good amount of time forward.
I know.
But don't change bodies. They're still 14-year-old bodies. I'm like, oh, Hideaki Anno, no.
Right. Well, because we know why Rei doesn't change bodies or it doesn't age or whatever, because she like switches out parts or how whatever happens. But
no, all of them, they talk about the curse of being a pilot. And this is not something that was in the original series, but
basically, I mean, from the end of, well, from parts of two onward, it's a whole new frontier in Eva.
Well, they've called it the curse of an Eva pilot. Basically, extended periods of time in LCL slows down your body's changes. That's it. You don't need to have anything crazier than that. But we'll talk about it in the third movie, because it's like, oh, that's weird. But
it is weird. But again, I had a comment on that, because especially if you're not expecting it, you're like, wait a minute, I was just told she was 14 and we have a very sexualized gag here that's supposed to be funny, but I know they're both kids. I mean, like, it's not that this is a weird situation with someone who is much older than her, but you're like, this feels weird. And the weird thing is about that sequence, when Shinji is delivering the new ID card to Rei and walks into her apartment or hovel, whatever she's living in.
It's just a little apartment.
Yeah, it's a weird dingy apartment too. That obviously isn't kept up, because Rei doesn't seem to care about that kind of stuff initially. She's just got a shower. He let himself in because Shinji's, as previously mentioned, an idiot. And she basically, hey, what are you doing here? And she is, you have the comedy of errors of Shinji turning around going, you've seen it in an anime. Like the guy sees a girl and just acts like an absolute moron. Trips,
knocks underwear out of her drawer. And it's because he's grabbing glasses that belong to his father that she is in ownership of. And trips also, I think, on his back and grabs her towel, falls on top of her, and is akimbo atop her with like a hand on her breast or two hands on her breast. I forget. It's a lot of
breast grabbing.
But yeah, it's almost exactly from the series, the same sequence, which is, I feel like an anime trope of like a school anime trope of like accidentally, you know, falling on your love interest in kind of an out of context way. The turn in this scene is that while he's super embarrassed, she has like no context for why he would be, and it does not faze her at all. So like that scene,
yeah, she's just like, can doesn't move forward.
because she's, you know, not human really in a few ways. She's almost more machine than human. She responds the complete opposite of how you imagine a girl would respond in that situation. But yeah, Shinji is our human character that we follow, our kind of main character in this series, and his response kind of changes a little bit throughout the series, and we'll talk about as these go on, but very similar to the show in this respect. Do you want to talk about how this movie did when it came out and online? Yeah. 7.5 on IMDb, 71% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a very similar score on Letterboxd, 3.7 stars on Letterboxd, which is like a 7.4 on a 10 star scale. So good, not great for a lot of folks out there. Pretty consistent across the board. I think maybe that's, audience scores a
solid
little
score
higher. Yeah.
IMDb is typically like lower than like what you would think it would be, you know?
The most common complaints, and probably the ones that I have similarly, are that this doesn't really add much to the original show. It's like, what is the point of doing it this way and not, you know, changing some things up? And there were some changes to this movie, but not that many. This is something that is wholly rectified in the second rebuild film, and then they take it to a crazy extreme with the third movie. It's so different. It's basically a completely new series in the third movie. So that does get rectified, and I think the scores kind of do go up because of that. Do you want to talk about your personal enjoyments? Do you want to get to?
Yeah, let's. One of the things that I was curious about going into this is coming through the lens of kaiju cinema and how I would look at it in this lens. Now, that's really going to come more into the technical and evocative nature. For personal enjoyment, I'm giving this a solid 8. This is a 1-for-1 of the first 6 episodes of Evangelion. So even if you haven't watched Evangelion proper, like this is a good, like honestly, this is a good way to start anyway. It's going to sound weird to people who are fans of the series, but like this is almost a little translation of the first 6 episodes done with really, really fantastic animation, pretty solid CGI, and voice acting. Not great voice acting, which I'm going to come to a little bit later.
Yeah, I turned off the
I know you did.
dub and turned on the sub very quickly. I was like, oh man. But I don't think I really had much history with the dub. I know a lot of people, you know, with Spike Spencer and some of the American voice actors from the original Funimation dub, you know, got to love the series that way. That was not how I watched.
No, and I've got nothing about against Spike Spencer. He's done a lot. Like he's Majin Buu in Dragon Ball Super. He has a huge backlog of anime and video game credits. I don't love some of the choices, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But otherwise, I think this is a really, really good start. It kind of, my big problem with a lot of these movies is they feel like parts of a miniseries and less of individual films. And this is pretty much across the board for the entire Rebuild project. It does affect my for in terms of kaiju cinema, it does affect my personal enjoyment a little bit because, you know, it kind of ends with that to be continued. Mm-hmm. And if I watch this in 07, and especially if I never watched Evangelion before, I'm like, oh, I want to really see what happens. And like, it feels like a series, you know, and that is something that this entire project does not escape. That said, they do a good job of just retelling that story in the best way possible. Shinji is the most irritating in this one. He has other moments here. I mean, like I said, he is just a protagonist that just gets on my very last nerve. But I think the ideas are presented very well. I think the fights are fantastic. It's entertaining. It's a cool concept. And especially for if you've like ever been kind of reticent to check it out just because of either its kind of long-standing reputation as a very difficult text, or, you know, 26 episodes plus a movie sounds like a lot, this is a good place to start. And it's very entertaining. It's very, very solid, despite some minor discrepancies. But yeah, it's solid. So 8 out of 10. What about you, man?
Same as you, 8 out of 10. I think part of it is because I've seen this before. I think this can be an excellent movie for folks watching it the first time. Even if you've not seen the show, it does, I think it really feels like three episodes smushed together. I think because of how the story is laid out, it does a pretty good job of moving things along into like a first, second, third act of a film. So I think it works mm-hmm. fairly well in that respect. I think it is one of those things, if you watch this movie and you like it, you should go back and watch the show, you know, and then move on to the next films and rebuild. And you can honestly skip the first six episodes of the series if you watch this movie, because so many of it is one-to-one. There is some additional context scenes thrown into this movie. Some characters change and are changed a little bit here and there. I really enjoyed my time with this film. I was actually thinking of kind of skipping it because I did hear how close it was one-to-one, and then just, you know, watching it when I had time and just like dive right into 2.0. But I did watch this first. I was like, okay, yeah, it's exactly what I remember. But yeah, 8 out of 10 for me as well, Miles.
So you mentioned something, and I think it's going to come up a little bit more often in this show from here on out than I anticipated, mm-hmm. because we are now well into the 21st century. And a lot of these movies that we're going to be covering are movies that you and I have now seen. Like we had at this point entered our kaiju, you know, points of our lives and seen a lot of these movies from this point onward. Mm-hmm. And most of the movies that we had watched before the 21st century, either we had at least seen a couple times or hadn't in a while or had never seen at all or heard of. But more and more often than not, I think from here on, we're going to be having the situation where we have seen these movies before. We already have impressions. And I'm wondering how much that's going to color our personal feelings.
Yeah, you had watched this, of course.
I have, yes.
For some time. As my first viewing, I really enjoyed it. I will say for the technical aspect, there are a lot of elements of the CGI that just I don't like as much as the mm-hmm. hand-drawn animation. And I think it's because the last Evangelion thing that I watched was End of Evangelion. And I know that they can do hand-drawn animation in like a movie-style setting and have it be just beyond perfect. That the animation in that I just love so much.
Yeah, it's good.
I will say I love the angels being depicted with CGI. Like you said, I think it gives it kind of an otherworldly, you know, and an extra-dimensionally different kind of vibe. Some of them, especially in the second, third movie, some of them look really rough. This movie, not so much. I think the designs for these angels are great, especially Ramiel. Like I said, I do not like the Evas depicted in CGI. It just doesn't look as good. It looks like just giant toys kind of like mashing together in some of the later movies. But there's not that much of that in this film. It's so funny because there are some fight sequences where they jump back and forth between CGI Evas and hand-drawn animation Evas, and it's like one of these things is not like the other.
I think it's also important to note this change was slowly happening in anime in general. Like 2007, this was only starting to happen a little bit. By the time this series, like in 2012, when the third one comes out, like that is normal in anime. Like yes. we are in a weird spot especially in Japanese film history, where, I mean, they weren't slow to adapt CGI, but like getting the resources to make CGI more and more on the level was becoming more and more available to them from here on going forward. And so it's not just, oh, they did this because this was happening everywhere there at this point in time. So it will be interesting because we are watching a full like progression because the series takes so long to come out.
Yeah, no, it really, you can tell how they kind of get better. And I will say the Thrice Upon a Time almost has entirely too much CGI in some of the like big battle sequences, but that's not a problem here. I'm giving this an 8 out of 10 for the technical, because I really do think these first six episodes work plot wise together as kind of a Shinji, Rei, Gendu kind of focus to the film. I do wish more was added in. I think you have this capability. You can add in scenes here and there that weren't in the original show that enhance the story in a few different ways, maybe to the sacrifice of some classic scenes. Maybe just make the movie, you know, 2 hours long. It was only 98 minutes. And honestly, that is, it's not the shortest of these rebuild films, but I think people have waited, you know, a decade. If you want to appease some of the fans, maybe just give them a little bit more.
I actually completely agree with you. Oh, did you say your score?
Eight out of 10.
I do agree with you on that. This is a brisk 98 minutes. It feels like it's a brisk, like recounting. By the time it's over, I was like, oh man, that's it. That to me is a little bit of the detriment. I would have liked a little bit more either added in or some new scenes, new fleshing out of character, which we see more in the second film. I think that might've been a criticism that popped up a lot because they certainly listen to some of that. I'm 100% with you there. I do love the CGI angels. I think the designs are incredible. I think the fights are really well done. Like seeing the gun kind of pop out in the city and like how they basically have like built the city to be a battleground is so cool.
Yes.
I do think the script needed, some tightening up on it from an English perspective. The localization is not good. It's not that Spike Spencer is a bad voice actor. There's something about it that just doesn't work for me. It's choices made. It's not ability, because I've heard this guy in other things. He's a very good voice actor. I just don't like. I also just don't like Shinji in general. So there's that.
It's so much worse in the English. To be honest, like you go and you listen to Shinji's voice actor in the Japanese is a woman named Megumi Agato, and she is great. I actually really love her portrayal of Shinji, and it is different from her original voice acting of the character, and it has changed, and it goes along with his character's changing. He just still sounds so snivelly and sad with Spike Spencer's voiceover.
Yes.
And, at least in this movie. I didn't listen to much of the next ones.
There are some vocal choices that I didn't like at first that I got used to, like Masato. I wasn't super into how they were doing it at first, but the more it goes on and like you kind of hear, especially in the second film, like I love her. Love Rei. Love Papa Akari. He's great. He's just, they got a great voice actor for that one. But yeah, the localization does hurt. I think not having anything new and making it feel like an individual film also hurts. This is my big problem with the rebuild series, not as a creative experience, but as a film experience. And I want to make that, if we were grading this on just like it being a mini series or whatever, this is a great first episode. But yeah, I'm with you. 8 out of 10 is very fair because there's a lot of strong things in its production. I think its script and its voice acting bring it down a little bit. Some of the CGI stuff with the Avas, I think you're right, doesn't quite work, but yeah, solid. What about the evocative nature of the first movie?
I think this is where it dips down a little bit in the case of its importance, because like, honestly, I'm thinking it's like, why do we need this film? They could have just recut the first six episodes into a movie format. And would have worked pretty much just as well as this. Maybe would have paled a little bit animation wise, but even if they had just like upgraded some scenes or redone like the Eva battle scenes, it's just not different enough for me to love this film. So, you know, if the answer is bringing new fans to the franchise, this only came out 10 years after the original show. So I don't know how big of a generational gap there was. I think as the series goes on, you're going to hit another.
Bigger than you think, I would say.
I will say as the series goes on, there's definitely a generational gap.
Full generation that happened in between the first and last entries.
Well, you go from 10 years to the final movie, like I said, being 24 years different. But yeah, I feel like it is, this movie is so overshadowed by the other three films and their differences to the original. This, you can honestly just watch the first six episodes of Evangelion and kind of get, honestly, I think you should watch a few more, but watch a few episodes and get into the world. So I'm not giving a terrible score. I just think this is the least important probably of the quadrilogy. So I'm giving it a 7 out of 10.
Don't you test me now.
7 out of 10. So dropping it down just a little bit from the other eights. What about you, Miles?
So I actually feel a little bit more on the other side of the spectrum of that. In that, like, it's hard to say that this film is important by itself because it is part of a kind of entire movement of a story. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's kind of why I said the same thing I did in the technical aspect, where this is a new season. These are OVAs. This is what they are.
Pretty much, yeah.
Which is not disparaging. They're just not films. This is not made with the intention of this being a singular work and standing on its own. It literally ends with "to be continued."
Yeah, it is made, and the original idea was to have a three-part kind of retelling of the entire series, which obviously I think changed as they continued on, but
that,
added in various other story elements.
That said, I think I can turn around and if someone asks me, you know, oh, should I check out Evangelion? I can give them this movie. If they are into what they're watching, they can choose to either watch this series starting with episode 7, or they can watch the Rebuild series and go on that way. Mm-hmm. I think this is a great shorthand, like, introduction. I actually really applaud the decision to go one for one with the first entry, adding a comfortable control for both fans and new people alike. So we all have a base starting out point. I think that's a really interesting, like, I understand what you're saying and I don't disagree with you. I just think for me that effort means a little more. It's tough to say because, like, Evangelion is really more responding to me, especially with the first couple episodes, to mecha anime than it is to kaiju cinema. Despite the fact that these Evangelions kaiju, I wouldn't say they're not. But they're, especially when you find out like what they're supposed to represent, they are something so different than we've ever encountered with kaiju before. That on one hand, I'm like, okay, yeah, so it's not really concerned with Kaiju Ega, or it's adding something completely brand new to Kaiju Ega. And
I mean, it's not just that though. Boy howdy, it's adding something just new to the universe.
Oh no, I like, agree. I'm just specifically like looking at the lens. So I can't fully commit to what that means. Mm-hmm. I think even now it's not been enough time because the kind of final movement of this symphony is only a couple years old, and I'm looking forward to coming back to it even after 3 years of seeing it. But I'm giving it an 8 out of 10 for evocativeness.
Yeah, to be honest, the original end of Neon Genesis 2 end of Evangelion is still ahead of its time. Like, there is nothing that comes close to it, I feel like, in the anime kind of universe today, on a same scale of kind of world building. And honestly, now that I've completed the Rebuild series, it adds a lot to the universe, adds a lot to
story. Said at the top of the show, the Rebuild, or maybe it was off air, Rebuild is my currently my preferred way to experience Evangelion. So
honestly, fans of Evangelion are, they have so like little actual material, base material, as opposed to, I guess, fans of the other larger series, your Gundams and whatnot,
right?
But it's 10 times quality wise what you get in most of these other shows, and it's so deep.
I'm only saying this in reference to its artistic endeavors and the fact that it has a very open interpretations for its ending. It is the Twin Peaks of anime.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Very much so. And yeah, Rebuild does feel like a great coda.
Like the Return.
just like Return Twin Peaks.
Oh, man, if Shinji was like, Dougie's Ava? I would be a Shinji fan.
we're going to talk more about this series, but this movie, at the very least, is a great way to get back into Evangelion if you've watched the series or you watched it many years ago. We're both giving it basically an 8 out of 10. So our podcast final is an 8 out of 10, which is in our consideration for what we consider great kaiju movies. And I mean, yeah.
And I still feel torn on that, but like, yeah, the math works.
these fights that are just in this first movie are some of the best kaiju fights. I just love all three of them so much.
Yeah.
But that's going to do it for us. Miles, where can folks find us if they want to chat? Yeah, Evangelion.
I mean, legit, if you want to chat, join the Cosmic Crit Discord. There's a Kaiju versus History channel on there, and we are there basically every single day. So if you actually want to chat, come aboard. Otherwise, you can reach us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter, X, whatever they call it, at Kaiju versus History. Visit our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Please rate, review our show, comment, share with your friends, and let us know what you think. Check out our Letterboxd account to see all our reviews and watch our list of films. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Thanks, Miles. Thanks, listeners. We're going to catch you next time when the Mockbusters begin to release directly to DVD once more. And this time before the film that they are stealing from. We have next week a faux found footage film that's going to take aim at the mystique surrounding the mysterious Cloverfield movie.
Egregious.
You may have never heard of it, and that is probably for the best, because we're going to be right back here next episode to tune in with us to the terribly named History versus Monster. The movie's just called Monster.